Submarine swaps employ hash time-locked contracts, or HTLCs, which in layperson's terms enable two transactions, both sides of a swap, to happen simultaneously by linking them together cryptographically inside of a smart contract. Using this technology, there is no way for one exchange to occur without the other occurring at the same moment. This is the most trustless solution that exists for moving sats between Bitcoin layers. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. This show is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin. Swan Bitcoin is the best place to start your Bitcoin journey. Please do not go to a crypto exchange that wants you trading every day for the next piece of dog shit token. Swan makes it easy to automatically stack and automatically withdraw for long-term stacking. And of course, they'll show you how to use a CoinKite cold card hardware wallet from CoinKite. You can find that in their amazing resources. And we got a discount because cold card also supports the show. Special links and discount codes, all that good stuff in the show notes. All right. So today I wanted to, and I kind of talk about this in the commentary after this, the guy's take. But I found an article that was literally just about Bolts, which is a company. And I just kept hearing about Bolts, and I knew they were like the back end on specifically the Aqua wallet, and they like did swaps, and I just didn't know. I don't know. Their name just always came up, but I felt like I didn't have a solid grasp on what they were and how, like, what services use them, what wallets use them, and exactly what role they played. And I knew they used atomic swaps, and I wanted to just kind of dig into it. And Bitcoin Magazine literally had an article just about Bolts and then about the idea of atomic swaps and creating trustless bridges between all of the layer twos in the all of the layered ecosystem of Bitcoin, Lightning, and even eCash and Liquid and all of these things, which as these things expand and Arc and all of this stuff starts to grow, I think we will have these connecting services between all of them and atomic swaps happening all over the place. But I think from the context of if somebody else wants to set up another service like this or think about this and realize what kind of role this plays in the Lightning network, and then also to understand kind of the implications and what kind of wallets you can use that will obscure away this stuff that's happening and how you can use their API. So if you're building something yourself, this just becomes a really useful tool to have in the toolbox, or a really great opportunity when it comes from trying to build competitors or build new tools and where it is in the market they fit in and what people need to have a great user experience. And Bolts has been around for a long time now, you know, basically with, they were on the Lightning Network very early on, and they've only very, well, this is part of the article, but they've only very recently kind of taken it very, very seriously and gone full on and really turning Bolts into a full standalone company that they hope to grow for itself. So let's get into the article, and we will do some guy's take after. And it's titled, Between Bitcoin Layers, Bolts Builds Trustless Transfers, by Frank Korva. Bolts co-founder and CEO Killian and his team have created an easy-to-use, non-custodial solution for moving Bitcoin between the base chain, Lightning, and Liquid. Company name, Bolts. Founders, Killian and Michael. Date founded, the project began in 2019 and was incorporated in 2023. Location of headquarters, remote, incorporated in El Salvador. Amount of Bitcoin held in treasury, 100% of the treasury is BTC. Number of employees, 5. Website, bolts.exchange. A private company. Swapping sats between Bitcoin layers can be difficult. but Bolts makes it easier. Bolts is a non-custodial exchange that lets users send their Bitcoin between the Bitcoin Base Chain, the Lightning Network, and the Liquid Network. The company likes to think of itself as a trustless bridge between Bitcoin layers. While Bolts is now used by both everyday Bitcoin users and institutions alike, the platform, which is almost as old as the Lightning Network itself, was born out of necessity and was foundational in helping the Lightning Network function in its early days. The history of Bolts. Bolts as an idea started in 2018, Killian told Bitcoin Magazine. I was working on a Lightning-based decentralized exchange and realized pretty quickly that it was very tough to keep Lightning channels balanced, he added. Bolts was really born as a band-aid to fix this, a service provider that would take care of your Lightning channel balances and keep them balanced for you. In creating Bolts, one of the primary non-negotiables Killian and his team established was that it had to be non-custodial, so to best align with the Bitcoin ethos of decentralization. The Bolts mainnet launched in April 2019 and facilitated Bitcoin Base Chain to Lightning swaps only until early 2023, when Killian and Bolts' other co-founder Michael realized that Bolts needed more attention. We saw it organically growing, and we felt that it deserved more, said Killian. We decided in early 2023 to go in full-time and that the next major feature would be Liquid swaps, which we then launched in May of 2023, he added. It was around this time that Killian and Michael turned Bolts into a proper business, as opposed to a passion project which it had been up until that point. In doing so, they went after a new user base and experienced some growing pains in the process. Liquid swaps. In 2023, when we started Liquid swaps, we targeted more professional users, specifically for the channel rebalance use case in a fee-sensitive environment, explained Killian. We launched it during the fee spike in May of 2023. The fee spike to which Killian referred to is the result of the introduction of ordinals onto the Bitcoin Base Chain. Bitcoin transaction fees had reached all-time highs by late April 2023. As fees rose to 500 and 600 sats per VByte, resulting in transaction fees hitting over $100 in some cases, things began to break and even Bolts felt the heat. We had to shut down Bolts for 3 or 4 days, recalled Killian. Bolts was not available because we had all our working capital locked up in the mempool, and we were not able to bump it out because fees kept on rising. A lot of similar services had this problem, he added. Killian then pointed out that Liquid was a solution for many companies facing this predicament. If you imagine the typical use case of getting inbound liquidity on Lightning, you can do so multiple times with Liquid, explained Killian. You send out via Lightning, thus getting inbound liquidity, and get Liquid LBTC back. This really made a lot of sense to users when we launched it. The launch was successful, and we breathed a little bit of life into the Liquid ecosystem, he added. Killian also shared that Bolts' swap service underpins the Aqua wallet, a wallet that enables Liquid to Lightning swaps that became popular in mid-2023. Bolts, behind the scenes. Aqua isn't the only Bitcoin-related product that employs Bolts on the back end. Breeze Wallet, a non-custodial Lightning wallet, was actually the first Bitcoin wallet that utilized Bolts' swap service. Sometimes Breeze users want to send to an on-chain regular Bitcoin address because the merchant only accepts on-chain, said Killian. So Breeze integrated our open, publicly available API in order to offer these swaps directly within the app. For a Breeze wallet user to spend some of their sats on Lightning for an on-chain purchase, they simply have to scan a Bitcoin QR code, and the Bitcoin swap from Lightning to the Bitcoin Base Chain happens in the background via Bolts. Killian said that Bolts plans to work with more companies in providing its service behind the scenes. It's crucial for great UX that users do not have to open our website, but can stay in whatever product or wallet they are using and move their Bitcoin between layers right where they are, Killian said. Our non-custodial API is something we pioneered, and we are very proud of. How Bolts works. Atomic swaps. According to Killian, creating a non-custodial service, especially one that integrates well with other non-custodial services, was not an easy task. As mentioned, keeping the service non-custodial was a must for Killian and the Bolt's team, partially because they didn't want to be regulated as an entity that custodies users' funds, and partially because they didn't want users to have to trust intermediaries to execute the transactions. "You do not want to trust a random website, a random project that you find on the internet," explained Killian. "We also want to be available to users that say, okay, I don't know them necessarily, but I hear these guys saying it's non-custodial. Probably some technical person checked that it's actually non-custodial, so I'm going to give it a shot," he added. The key technology that enables Bolts to be non-custodial is the atomic swap, and Bolts utilizes a subcategory of atomic swap called the submarine swap. Submarine swaps employ hash time-locked contracts, or HTLCs, which in layperson's terms enable two transactions, both sides of the swap, to happen simultaneously by linking them together cryptographically inside of a smart contract. Using this technology, there is no way for one exchange to occur without the other occurring at the same moment. This is the most trustless solution that exists for moving sats between Bitcoin layers. And in January of this year, Bolts took this technology to the next level when it enabled Taproot swaps, which has helped make issuing refunds on failed Lightning transactions more efficient. Until January, when a swap to a Lightning invoice or to a Lightning destination failed, you had to wait until you could get your refund back, said Killian. That's a drawback and just bad UX in the end. With Taproot, there's a new way you can spend coins. It's called key path. And with this key path spent, basically what we could do is we could issue refunds immediately, he added. Killian added that Taproot swaps also enhance privacy, as they don't reveal anything about the swap on-chain. If a chain observer is looking at the chain, one cannot tell that this is part of an atomic swap or even a Bolts swap, explained Killian. There's no way to do that. A, quote, privacy-respecting solution. After Killian said the P word, privacy, I inquired as to whether or not he was worried that Bolts might end up in the crosshairs of the authorities, especially in the wake of the U.S. Department of Justice, the DOJ, pressing charges against the Samurai Wallet developers. I'd be lying if I said we're not worried at all, because everyone is worried and everyone was very worried, especially in the first couple of days after the Samurai incident happened, responded Killian. However, he was quick to point out that Bolts isn't itself a privacy solution, but a, quote, privacy-respecting solution. We are in no way to be compared with a CoinJoin or with a solution that you are using in order to gain privacy, said Killian. When you do a swap on Bolts, there's minimum one party that has the information of incoming and outgoing payments, and that is us. You shouldn't trust us to not reveal this information one day, he added. That being said, we are respecting privacy in the sense that we are not requiring more information than is strictly necessary, the destination address or the destination invoice, in order to do this work. We do not need your email address. We also do not need your IP address. You can access our service via Tor. The future of Bolts. Moving forward, there's one main role Killian would like for Bolts to play. Our vision is to really be the bridge between the Bitcoin layers, he said. We are seeing Bitcoin Layer 2 sidechains, different sorts of layers are gaining traction, and this box won't just close. This is unstoppable now, and we want to be the place that connects these layers, he added. At the same time, Killian stressed that Lightning will continue to be Bolt's primary focus, as he considers it the connecting tissue between Bitcoin layers. On that note, he mentioned that Bolts recently launched a new client that automates the task of rebalancing Lightning nodes. It's clear that while Killian and the team at Bolts are keeping their eyes open for new opportunities, they will continue iterating on what they do best. Whatever the future holds for Bolts, Killian said repeatedly that it will continue to focus on being, quote, the easiest place with the best UX to non-custodially move sats in between Bitcoin layers. This episode is brought to you by Technical Analysis and Charting is just horoscopes for Bitcoiners, which is why you should not be trading the most important asset in the world today. And you will get no better advice than at swanbitcoin.com. If you want to start your Bitcoin journey in a place that is not going to lead you astray, that will teach you how to hold your own keys, that will help you understand the value and the long-term understanding of Bitcoin and why you should just be slowly buying and stacking as much as you can for as long as you can, and do it so easily by setting it up automatically at Swan and then automatically withdrawing it to your keys. And if you just want to jump up there and you just want an app where you can just smash buy some Bitcoin whenever you want, Swan has your back there too. And when you take that next step to get your business plugged into Bitcoin, if you're thinking about putting it on the treasury, if you're thinking about putting it in an employee benefits package, if you're thinking about a long-term vault, if you're thinking about and setting up an IRA and investing in Bitcoin tax-free, and so many others, Swan has an entire suite of financial services to get on a Bitcoin standard or to just get started with easily and cheaply buying your first Bitcoin. And for the first $10,000 worth of Bitcoin that you buy on Swan, there are no fees at all, and just 0.99% after that. Check them out at my special link, which is right there in the description of this show, swanbitcoin.com/guy. Don't get lost in charting horoscopes. Don't listen to fools who gamble on the most important asset in the world. Go to a place that wants you to keep your Bitcoin and to understand why it is so important. swanbitcoin.com/guy. All right, so the reason I wanted to read this article is because I honestly didn't know much about Bolt. I hear their name all the time, and I knew it was running on the back end and it was doing stuff, and I kind of thought of it like an exchange, kind of like side swap or something like that, but I just wasn't quite realizing how integrated they were. And I've been using Aqua Wallet a lot for just to basically have a, just because I really like Liquid. I think Liquid is a simple and easy trade-off for, especially for smaller amounts, if I want to be able to get it in kind of a static thing that doesn't need to stay updating and that I'm not using often for payments. I can basically offload into Liquid and then swap out. The only issue I think I have with that is that the fee for those swaps is a percentage rather than an amount, like based on kind of the data. So the bigger your transactions are, the more expensive it is. Whereas at a lower level, if you're just swapping out from Liquid to Lightning, you're still just paying that percentage. So the fee might not be that big on like a really small transaction. So you can still do small transactions, but the fee scales up rather than just being explicitly like an on-chain fee plus a small thing. There may be like some sort of a limit. Like, I've never paid an exorbitant fee on any of the swaps, but it's something to consider if you're doing a lot of activity or trying to move a lot of money through it, because you are doing a Liquid transaction and paying Lightning fees and whatever their swap service stuff is. So even though those fees are both going to be way lower than a Bitcoin on-chain fee, there's simply an intermediary fee there to consider. Whereas, you know, something like Phoenix and Breeze, which I haven't used Breeze in a while because I've been using Phoenix, and I'm actually trying to move back over to that one and get back into it, because I was under the impression that Breeze was really kind of gearing towards the back end a little bit more and like really building out their API, their SDK, and their kind of the business side and the LSP side of things for the Lightning service provider, which of course they are, but I wasn't sure what was going to happen with the wallet. So I just kind of moved away thinking that they were going to be making a big change and maybe the wallet was going to be different. And I was just kind of like waiting to see what they were doing. And I think they've just been so focused on that other thing that the wallet has still just continued to operate with their LSP model and using their SDK. But they simply really haven't pushed it much. And it is a non-custodial, that you actually do the routing on your side. Like, I actually download all the filters for the network, for, you know, the Neutrino filters and all the block filters. I'm running a full light client in Breeze. So it's actually more sovereign than Phoenix. And it is more private than Phoenix as well, because something like Phoenix, they are actually doing the routing for you. So they are aware of the payment. And if you're, so it's a little bit like Bolt's in that sense, is that they're doing that for Lightning and just making sure that everything's a fast response and calculations are good and you have plenty of RAM and everything on the device and you can try a bunch of routes and you're not waiting to sync and stuff. Like, for instance, Breeze. I haven't opened Breeze and let it sync in a long time, so it's going to take like 5 or 6 minutes here probably to sync it because I just updated it and I'm trying to move stuff back to it. But this is a great example of like Bolt's being able to, like, providing a service, and so amazingly, like, the really cool thing is the ability to provide these services non-custodially. That is such an unbelievably cool thing that there is trust only in the service provider being available and then the time lock necessary to get stuff back if they are not available. And I also looked into the Taproot things that they talk about, the Taproot swaps, which is really cool. I read the article that they linked to, which I will have that link in the show notes because I don't want to read it here. But just essentially the simple TLDR of what's going on here is that with Taproot, you actually write the script for the transaction and then you use the hash of the script in order to tweak the signature because you're using Schnorr signatures, which can be added and you can do math very easily on those signatures rather than having the script in the signature. So normally when you're doing like a HTLC or you're making an expenditure over Lightning and you're making the paths that Lightning contract can go so that you have the security and you have the non-custodial element, is you have a secret key, you have a pre-image that is... I won't say pre-image. You just have a secret. It's basically an individual password for your individual payment. It's like a receipt number or something. And it is a secret key that unlocks the payment. And you keep it until the payment is... Everybody in the payment is obviously there and has the liquidity. Everybody has made the response in their... You know, all their devices have said, we're good to go. And then the pre-image is sent to the recipient. And then that secret key is sent to the recipient and then it unlocks the payment through all the paths back to the user. So that secret is part of the script. And that's exactly why there is no trust in the exchange, is that you're not actually trusting anybody, because as soon as you get the secret, you have all of the keys necessary to unlock the payment. But this secret key is part of the Bitcoin path. The script is part of the Bitcoin transaction. And the script is part of the Bitcoin transaction. And then there is the signature. It is all separate. So you have all of this data together. And the signature is, you know, one of the biggest parts of the data on a transaction. Now with Taproot, when you have Schnorr signatures, what you do is you take a hash of the script and you tweak. You perform based like a simple math on the signature, which is an aggregate signature of both parties. So it's a single signature. And you do that little tweak, and then the signature simply isn't valid unless the script is included in the transaction. So it has the same effect of forcing you to use the script, of having the script be a locking mechanism to the transaction, and then you can do, you know, as many paths and different setups and stuff as you want, but it all lies inside of a single signature. So it's not extra data. And that means that they can actually add an extra path and they can actually have a refund part of the script in which it's just a simple 2-of-2 multisig that is cooperative and it gets sent back. So normally what happens with the refunds right now is if you're doing a swap to on-chain from Lightning is that you have to wait the total time lock of the payment, which every single time you go through a hop, like go through another node and go through another channel, you have to have cascading time locks. So you have to have a time lock for every single thing on chain in order to actually recover it. And so if the payment doesn't go through, everybody's stuck in the time lock because we already locked it up. And you have to wait for that time to count down, which might be a day, 2 days even, for a countdown in order to actually get that money back, which just makes it that much more annoying. It's a really terrible UX to have a payment fail and then not be able to get your money back for 2 days. But it's not safe for anyone to try to redeem it before that, or nobody can, and you're going to do on-chain transactions. Like, you know, you have to do a bunch of uncooperative stuff. Essentially, if you don't have the private key, if you don't have the pre-image, because the payment didn't go through, well, then you can't redeem it until the time lock runs out. But what you can do with Taproot, apparently, is what's referred to as a key path spend. And rather than having two separate signatures, you can actually take the two keys and create an aggregated signature and then tweak it with the script. But that means that the aggregated signature adds an additional path or an additional capability, if you wish it to, in which if you and the other, like if me and Bolts simply agree, we can route around the time lock entirely, even without the payment private key, because we don't need the secret anymore, because we can actually create a valid signature just between the two of us cooperatively, because that signature was tweaked after we created it from our two private keys. So essentially it means that we allow ourselves to cooperatively send the transaction forward, but we can now also cooperatively refund it and still have the time lock to deal with the trust issue. So if Bolts disappears, that's when you still have to wait for the time lock. But as long as Bolts is there and you can ping their API and everybody's happy and we know that there's a refund, the refund can immediately go straight back to your wallet. And this is actually a great thing to explain, or a really good use case to explain why Taproot is actually so valuable here, is because you don't have to remove or alter the original spend path, the original trust assumptions of the script and the ability to exit, in order to actually tweak the signature so that you can get a cooperative option at the same time. And best of all is the privacy that you gain. And this is also something that I've been really hoping and waiting. I don't think many clients still are using Taproot for Lightning, for Lightning channels, but I still think that would just be a huge improvement to the size. And I mean, not a huge one, like maybe 10-20% saving on fees and data going into the chain. But still, that's something that's significant, especially when you're talking about tons of different transactions and moving large amounts of money. The more and more capital that is actually with this being used on this platform, I think those 10 to 20% improvements on data structure are just going to be that much more meaningful. I mean, I use Bitcoin and Lightning enough now that I watch those fees. It's important for me to understand the fee structure because I send a lot of payments and I do a lot of stuff. So it does, at the end of the day, make a difference in my sats flow if I am careful about the way that I use, I set up fees and I use my setup and when and how I move something from one location to another or to cold storage, the size of my UTXOs, this sort of stuff. I mean, it's not like I have some like super structured system and I like freak out about it. It's always way more expensive to move fiat. Even when fees get bad, you move Bitcoin in larger amounts and everything's still just cheap. And the worst thing about all the fiat systems, even the ones that charge 1.5% or 2% fees, is the worst thing about them is they always have caps. So if you're doing all of your banking and you're having to go through Apple, which is what I do to fund Fold, I have like weekly limits on how much I can move. And I do my business and my personal through that to get the sats back. So I move quite a bit of funds and I hit my cap a lot. And it's really frustrating. It's funny, I never have, obviously there are no caps on Bitcoin, so I don't have to care about that because I'm using, because I do all of my main funding and my business, quote unquote, account and everything is in Bitcoin. But there's actually a significant privacy benefit, is that the details of what is happening and that there's an atomic swap at all, and that, you know, this is a payment or a channel or anything in the Taproot scenario, is specifically between you and the party that you are talking to. And that is it. There's no on-chain footprint that establishes or reveals that that is what is going on. And so not only is it a great data saving tool, but it's also a decent, simple privacy benefit to have that combination of stuff. Now, I also appreciate that Bolts, I mean, obviously they're trying to do this non-custodially because they know what a nightmare it would be to deal with the regulatory environment and the far higher risk and cost in doing that, but also just generally that they are a privacy conscious or attempting to basically just give the user as much privacy as they want. It's just that because of the way the atomic swap works, they have to obviously have payment details in order to perform the swap. So whenever you are swapping and you're calling to the Bolt API, simple fact of the matter is whether or not they can, they're seeing your IP address because you're on a, you're not on a VPN or you're not on Tor or whatever, which obviously they'll let you do, which is cool. But I mean, I don't know how you would, it's a whole different endeavor to try to build that in some sort of a cryptographically private way. I mean, maybe there's a way, and you know, maybe there's something with eCash and all the different things as we get new sidechains and new layers, and eCash and Fediment and a lot of these things become a major part of the layer two ecosystem. Maybe there will be benefits and new ways to actually utilize this, but I think simple wins in this scenario, because this is a tool for UX, and it's like, how do you get the best of privacy that you can get without suffering the fact that it just works? And how do you make something that is just reliable and just works? But I tell you what, it is awesome to be able to do that, to have atomic swaps between these different layers. And this is kind of the user experience that I think is going to become the norm. You have LSPs opening and dealing with channels, or even something like Bolt's dealing with channel management so that you always have liquidity and you can swap in and out to Liquid or Lightning or to on-chain if you need more liquidity for this, that, or the other. Especially when it comes to business stuff, it's cool to be able to like automatically manage. And it's crazy to think that when you start looking at these things, yes, you have privacy trade-offs, but you're getting a service, right? You're paying for a service from someone else. But the key thing is that you do not have to give up custody. You can get the user experience of a centralized service, of a service that is of a banking service that always knows or like always knows how to fulfill a payment no matter what, that you can help to always have a route to your destination, that you can bridge from all of the different payment mechanisms instantly and atomically and pay from Lightning over Liquid to an eCash network. And this can all be done non-custodially. The payment can be fulfilled entirely with a service provider that doesn't have control over the payments themselves. That is revolutionary. That is so crazy to think about, that the UX of totally custodial and centralized services can be built in a distributed, decentralized, non-custodial way. Privacy trade-offs entirely to the side. That is groundbreaking. That is insane. Like 15 years ago, that's a joke. What are you talking about? That doesn't exist in the world. Today, it is actually possible. And we are starting to bridge all of this stuff. And you also hear them talk or say that same idea that I think is so important and is that we talk about a lot on this show, is the fact that Lightning is the connective tissue between all of this stuff. Is Lightning, I think, ends up being a more business-to-business, server-to-server, major, like, techie node, sovereign node to sovereign node service, or protocol layer that bridges all of the layered ecosystem together. It is the web that connects. It's like the hard lines. It's like the Ethernet lines. It's like the trunk lines. It's like the cable that is run physically in the ground on the internet. It is that, except run in the bedrock of Bitcoin UTXOs, in channels and scripts on top of Bitcoin to route payments to and from all of the other networks. And that's one thing that I think, and I'm going to talk about this in a guy's take that we're doing very, very soon. I'm not sure if it'll be this week or next week because I have a lot of other things that I'm working on. It depends on which ones get completed first in order for publishing order. But one of the things that I will talk about in one of those episodes In fact, I'll just go ahead and share it. I'm going to be digging into the hard truths of Bitcoin. Is what do people think about this space, or what do people think about the technology, and what is the reality? What are we going to have to bite the bullet on and realize is true and work within, instead of clinging on to, you know, naivety or just hopes and dreams that something is the way that it actually is not? And there are a number of those. There are a number of those for, obviously, crypto people in general, but there are a number of them for Bitcoin. And one of those things that will be related to, I think, the fourth one, the fourth hard truth, that there will only be four, but the last one that we discuss in the episode, will be the nature of UTXOs, or it will be a result of the nature of UTXOs. That's probably a better way to put it, is that every UTXO will be a network. The overwhelming majority of major payments, commerce, and everything that will occur will happen in smaller groups that are all part of a single UTXO that then bridge and talk over Lightning to get to another subnetwork of another UTXO. Just like every single IP address is actually has a local area net underneath it, every single UTXO will be a network. I fully believe that is essentially the future of how we interact with this thing, and that is how we actually make payments and fees scale to a degree that makes sense and provide consistent, solid backlog for fee pressure on the Bitcoin base layer, and how we settle all of the transactions and the payments around the world that are necessary in order for global commerce to actually work on a Bitcoin, on a layered Bitcoin monetary system. And companies like this, services like this, nodes that do this sort of stuff and build these sorts of tools are going to be very well positioned, because when the liquidity isn't quite there, or when, partial payments need to be offloaded or branched out and some service provider needs to hold something, and whatever, the naive way of making the payment doesn't work perfectly, or something else needs to be leveraged, or somebody is not online, or there's an incompatibility, or you're on separate networks, whatever it is, you will go to somebody like Bolts. There will be an atomic swap in the middle. The eCash may have a key for an atomic swap in it for the network provider. It may be a whole bunch of ARCs and everybody's holding a covenant style transaction to unilaterally exit if they want, but that there is a service provider running and aggregating all of the fees so that everybody's paying tiny fees, but the on-chain updates to the ARC, to the main pool of everybody's transactions, is still has, you know, an enormous on-chain fee, but none of the users have enormous fees. And increasingly, that's also why I think it's so important to consider peer-to-peer protocols and things like are happening with pairs.com and the stuff that I talk about with Keet, the application we are building, and with Wholesale and everything built on top of Pair runtime. The reason I think this is so important, and Noster's another perfect example, is the relay model and the re-decentralization of network consensus isn't the word, for like a kind of a network state or coordinating between a bunch of disparate people, is especially with covenants, when you can start adding in data in a very simplified way that doesn't require direct and constant back and forth activity. Hedgehog is another great example that we talked about with Super Testnet on the show. And I love this, because this is something that you can do in Lightning today if we upgrade it. But Hedgehog is a perfect example of being able to do out of band, out of sync communication and still have that trustless nature of how payments are directed through channels or across networks and eCash and all of these things. But being able to organize peer-to-peer, being able to organize and make your own network connections and have those we can slowly build and aggregate these and the various fees and the various UTXOs over time and then combine them with Taproot signatures. When we start putting all of these pieces together in a fully functioning system, I think the network layer and the ability to talk directly peer-to-peer without a service in the middle and build our own private, like VPN style, like tunnel networks between peers that we do trust and users that we do want to access and send. We are okay with having payment information or even doing like a sort of a coin join so that the payment information is even blinded among a certain group. The networking layer is just as important, to figure out how we can do these things without servers, without middlemen, without people who are watching over everyone's shoulder because they are the central party, and that we can actually coordinate and aggregate these things ourselves. Because I know I could come up with 50 people that I could do a peer-to-peer network with where we could aggregate transactions and all pay fees together behind a single UTXO if we had a simple coordination mechanism that we could do asynchronously. And we could add everybody's covenant to it and then still just have it behind a UTXO. I know there's like at least 20, 30 people that I could name very quickly that I would trust to be a part of that group and to never add in malicious information or cause a transaction to fail on purpose, and that it would just run smoothly in my little web of trust, and we could all just get the benefit of aggregating our transactions together, both from a privacy perspective, but also from a simple compression on the chain perspective. But I think that will specifically require a number of those tools that I talked about. And in the meantime, I think, you know, Bolts, well, actually even in between that, Bolts, I think, will be a big part, or that sort of a service will be a big part of bridging those gaps and bridging those networks. And honestly, one thing I would like to see, I don't even know if Bolts I will look into this because I'm not aware of it, is whether or not anything that Bolts has built is specifically open source. I would be really curious, because what I want to see, and I think it makes sense that there's a limitation here, that people are less likely to make this available, like less incentive to do so. But I would love to see service provision tools become open source so that you could run your own Bolts exchange. But the problem, I think, the reason I think it will take a while for that side, like, so you could run a LSP with, you know, automated software that, you know, as long as you have really good reliability and uptime, that the LSP will basically run itself largely. But I think there's so much groundwork and there's so much difficulty in making these sorts of tools right now that you essentially have to be able to get your money back. And it's also explicitly the service provision. It's the business side of things. So it makes sense that they are still going to, which some of this may be open source. I don't know. I'm just kind of talking out of my ass in the context of there is more incentive for the business to keep the service provision stuff on the, especially network and liquidity infrastructure and LSP sort of infrastructure, making that their software and not open source so that other people can just like run it on the fly. And also that it's just difficult to have it running on the fly, and you probably are going to need somebody who's very skilled and knows what's going on anyway. You need a technically literate person to actually run the server and set up the service. But I think as time passes, we will slowly get those pieces. We will slowly get the libraries and the SDKs and the open source clients and the automated management, and these things will slowly be released until kind of the business and the service provision layer of it kind of goes up the stack a little bit for more custom stuff and more specific or intensive parts of the protocol. Essentially, we will just raise the plateau. We will raise the floor on what is available free and open source by raising the bar on the difficulty and the degree of services and tools and all of these things that are provided. But I suspect it will happen. It will just be something that takes more time to kind of clean up. And it's just kind of a, it's just a much more difficult task to get back-end stuff to run without a ton of knowledge or someone explicitly and very carefully managing it than it is to get front-end user stuff able to use a service simply. And look how much difficulty that still has just because of the state of these protocols and, you know, where some of the tech is still needed to improve to make this really streamlined and non-custodial and easy to plug into with any sort of a client. So anyway, I feel like I understand Bolts a lot better than I did before this, and so I thought I would share this with you guys. I think this will be useful, especially if anybody else out there is building or developing an app or a wallet or anything that's trying to integrate with a lot of this stuff, that this is probably the low-hanging fruit, right? This is the easy way to get more advanced and more seamless use of, you know, any payment option that comes up. So whatever your wallet is doing, let's say it's all on Liquid or it's all on Lightning. Well, if you get a Liquid address or you get a Bitcoin on-chain address, what do you do? Maybe you want to build your own custom solution. Maybe you just want it to work and you're not worried about that because you're building a different, you're building an app where the app is really important and you just want that interaction and the new service that you are building to be the focus, but you want to easily be able to utilize and take advantage of any of the available Bitcoin payment options. Well, something like Bolts and just using their API may essentially be the quick and dirty solution to just getting the app working and having Lightning and Bitcoin non-custodial, easy to use, and broadly compatible. And honestly, that's pretty cool. So anyway, I will have the link in the show notes if anybody is interested in checking that out. Let me know what you think. Thank you guys to everyone who boosted on Fountain and left me comments. It is much, much appreciated. I love you guys. Thank you for the sats, and also thank you to our supporters, to the sponsors of this show, Swan Bitcoin and CoinKite. Buy your Bitcoin on Swan. Please don't go to a crypto exchange that wants you to lose money so that they can make money. Go to Swan Bitcoin, sign up, start buying Bitcoin easily, and then get it on your cold card so that you know it's safe, you know it's yours, and you get a discount with Bitcoin Audible. Links and details are right in the description. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned, stay subscribed, so you can understand the hard truths of Bitcoin, because it's coming soon. Until then, I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible on the Guy Swan Network. Take it easy, guys. The fool doth think he is wise, but the wise man knows himself to be a fool. William Shakespeare.